Welcome to Iron and Ceramite, Librarius Omnis, where we explore the depths of the Black Library.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Iron and Ceramite Librarius Omnis, where myself and John are going through the Black Library. And we decided to start with the Horus Heresy and that whole series of books. We're now up to the first anthology, Tales of Heresy. I think that is what it's called. Yeah, Tales of Heresy. Hopefully you've already seen the coverage of our first story in this, the Blood Games, which we did last time around. It could be found on the channel. This time around, we're covering the second story. Wolf at the Door, which is obviously quite aptly about the Space Wolves, and gives us quite a good view of one of the more lesser known parts of the Legion's history. But ultimately, it's another good story. It's another short one, so hopefully we'll be able to do this in one take. gives us a good, as I said, it's quite a good story, and it's the first up to this point in the Heresy series where it's actually focused on the Wolves. We haven't come across the Space Wolves yet, really, so far in the Heresy. But it's, as I said, it's a nice book, and as per the Blood Games, it's a bit of a palate cleanser. It's a bit easier to get into. It's nice and action packed. I think, but also gives for the lore heads out there, there's a lot of subtle subtext and little nuggets for those, especially those Space Wolf fans. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there that leads into later stories, as well as lore of the chapter or the Legion as it stands today in the 41st millennium. But yeah, that's what we're going to cover today. So yeah. Welcome along.
Looking forward to getting into it. It's going to be a good one. So this one is by an author we haven't covered yet either. Mike Lee. We have not come across him yet, but he will be the author of the next full novel that we get into once we're done with Tales of Heresy, which is Fallen Angels. So
yeah,
we'll see how that goes, see if he can recover that storyline.
Indeed.
we'll look forward to that. So before we go into them, you're obviously our Space Wolves player. How did you like this one?
Yeah. I really like Wolf at the Door. I mean, we've talked about the Tales of Heresy anyway, that they're all pretty good. But as a a Space Wolves player, someone that's played them for a long while, I really enjoyed this one. I really enjoyed the context it gives you to the Legion, a bit more of what's going on in the wider narrative. I like that actually from a point of view that it introduces more of the Xenos, because at this point in the Heresy, a lot of what we've really focused on or has been focused on is you do get some of the Elder in some of the stories. You get old what's his name, Eldrad. So you see a bit of the Elder, but in this one, we're getting a view of what will be the effectively the Drukhari or the Dark Elder. So we get a bit of a focus on that. I think you see that some of the complexities that come with trying to reunite the lost the lost empires of man, because they've all kind of gone their own way. They're not too far from each other, but they seem to have just diverged slightly. And as I said, you get a look at the inner workings of how the I suppose the fleets are working, even though they're getting orders, from like their Primarch, and they're being called together. There's other priorities that they're doing while they're out on this frontier, on this crusade. And then we'll go into it as we get through it, but there's, as I said, there's nice little nuggets here, because this is dealing with the famed 13th company of the Space Wolves, and so there's a few bits and pieces that as we go through it are hinted at that form part of the you know, the lore narrative and fighting units of the Space Wolves as they are on the tabletop today.
Well, I'm sure as we go through, we'll have a couple of tangents.
Yes, and of course, the background that I've selected today is our main protagonist, the guy with the white beard. That is Bullvi, who we will meet very shortly. So that's him. He's because he is also featured in another book later on in the series called the 13th Wolf. I haven't got to that yet. I just that's where this art is from.
Cool. Well, let's get into it then, shall we?
Indeed.
Let's do it. Okay. So this story begins on the planet Canonus, I think it says.
Yeah, that's good.
A world inhabited by humans before the Age of Strife. Now, a column of Imperial forces, the veterans of the Arcturan Dragoons, were slowly and purposefully making their way from the capital, which they had taken by virtue of blood and valor. And around them, they basically had the armies of the tyrants of this planet laying in waste, and they basically smashed the place to pieces on their route to conquest. And they were making their way to the mountain range known as the Elysians, where in the days of old night, the population had constructed an enormous protective vault where they had sheltered it whilst the demonic forces and warpspawn had plagued the planet. Following old night, the mountains had been turned into a luxury getaway for the planet's tyrants and leaders, and the vault upgraded and was said to be able to withstand Armageddon itself. The column of tanks and personnel carriers made their way from the ruined capital towards the Elysians, picking off any survivors that tried to flee, man, woman, or child. The mountains, however, had been all but leveled following a six-hour orbital bombardment, and the columns of the Dragoons made their way to a plateau before disembarking, clearing the rubble and bodies away before they formed up on parade, looked to the western fringe towards this towering, featureless metal door. And just before dawn, three Stormbird assault craft appeared and landed on the plateau. The entrance ramp opened slowly, and the soldiers snapped to attention as the Emperor's wolves emerged onto the soil from two of the ships. The Astartes of the 6th Legion wore grey Mark II armour. The tech-heavy armour contrasted with the heavy warp pelts, runes and tokens that adorned it. Like space Vikings.
Indeed, yep.
They each carried a sword or battle axe and some sort of trophy from another triumph, mostly a skull or similar body part. But these soldiers formed up in an arrowhead, and once they were happy, they gave a silent signal. And with that, Bullvi, the wolf lord of the 13th Great Company and commander of the 954th Expedition, stepped onto the surface. He was followed by senior lieutenants and wolf guard, all of them more decorated and resplendent than the others, with bigger trophies from bigger slain enemies achieved in single combat and other wars. Bullvi and two others approached the massive door. Halvdan Baelor was one of them, the grizzled chief lieutenant. He'd lost an eye during a battle some time ago and now had an augmented one in its place. And he was suspecting some sort of treachery was afoot. Suspecting, untrusting man.
Indeed, yes. Using his augmetic eye to freak people out and scare people.
The other man, Jurgen, he snorted. Maybe they can't open the doors. Maybe the orbital bombardment has them trapped. And he laughs and asks if anyone has a shovel to get them out. The three of them were old men, even by Astartes standards. They had been reavers and sword brothers of Leman, King of Rus, before his true identity was revealed by the Allfather. Every warrior in the King's Hall had wanted to be elevated to fight alongside their king in the Great Crusade, but the Allfather had told them they were too old and the trials would kill them. But being stout and proud warriors, they had all wanted to do it anyway, and out of hundreds, only about 40 had actually survived. Even the Allfather had been impressed by this. In honour of the bravery, Leman Russ, who was no longer a king but a Primarch, created the 13th Company for them, and it was referred to as the Greybeards, but they prefer to be called Wolf Brothers. So while they're waiting, after a while, the huge door opened and a group of men stumbled out of the vault. Filthy and exhausted, they formed up messily until a junior officer emerged, not in much better a state, but he was able to bark some orders to straighten them up. And eventually there was about a full platoon of the tyrant's elite bodyguards formed up in front of the Astartes. Once there were 6,000 of them, 1,000 per tyrant, but not much remained. They marched towards the Astartes and one by one unbuckled their weapons, dropped them at the feet of the wolves and turned away. The officer went last and Bulvi asked where his commander was. And the officer told him that he shot himself shortly after the surrender was given. He returned to his men and they sank to their knees as the surrender ceremony continued. The slaves were the next ones to leave the vault. Just as filthy as the soldiers, they carried crates and chests of treasure and plunder belonging to the tyrants. Then the daughters and wives of the tyrants came out in white robes of mourning. They came and sank to their knees a few feet away from where the wolves stood until finally the tyrants emerged. They were pale-skinned with blotchy faces and their bodies were abused by overeating, drink and drugs. The women cried as the tyrants knelt in front of the wolves, exposing their necks in preparation for their execution. And Bulvi said, "And so we meet again." So they had been there for 7 years, and 7 years ago, they arrived to welcome them to the Imperium, back to the side of humanity. He had extended his hand to the leader, and they had spat at him in return and forced him to leave, threatening to kill him if he came back. He'd promised that they would regret it, and now they were. Their fleet and armies broken, cities destroyed, and sons were all dead. And he tells them that they are no longer tyrants, and will make sure they never rise back up. You would not spit at one of these dudes, would you?
You'd have to be really bold,
yeah,
to give that as your opening gambit. Given that, you know, as you said, space Vikings, Astartes, grizzled, old,
yeah,
carrying, you know, big old double axes, and you know, generally looking pretty mean and bigger than most of your troops. Even if you think you're incredibly well armed.
Mm.
I suppose they were like, hey, you know, we survived in here, or our ancestors survived in here against old night and chaos. How bad can it be?
Yeah.
But yeah, even so, spitting at the hand of any Astartes is a bold choice.
Yeah. And they're not like necessarily like the most like clean, prim soldiers. They're very savage looking as well, yeah, like by Astartes standards. They obviously had that very false sense of security.
Yes, absolutely.
Now,
yeah,
found out.
Yes.
Yeah. So with that, then Jurgen and Halbrand stepped forward and removed the chains of office and ripped their robes. If it had been up to them, they would have killed them all, but the Allfather wanted them spared. He pointed to the treasure that was piled high and said to them, "They will now ensure to rebuild what was lost and return items to planets they have plundered. Must ensure the sector becomes a stable part of our Imperium. The governor will be sent and assigned to watch over them, and they better not give any reason for us to return." Bulvi moved over to the slaves and told them to get up. He freed them. They're no longer slaves. You're now members of the Imperium and will never bow to another master. And with that, the three wolf brothers turned back to their ship. Halvdan mumbled again that they should have just killed them. They're not going to learn, and we'll be back in 20 years to sort it out. But Jurgen disagreed, saying that they will still be rebuilding in 100 years, let alone 20. And Bulvi surprises them and mutters about it being a waste. So much destruction and death, all because of 6 tyrants. But they agree that the Allfather is right. Humanity must be united if they are to control the galaxy, bring peace to it. Otherwise, everything up to this point has been for nothing. You get the sense very briefly that, like, and I think it's a bit of a theme that goes on, that Bulvi really doesn't want to just start killing people for no reason.
No, he's in those terms, you can see why he's the lord of this particular expeditionary force.
Yeah.
Because there is a measurement about him, you know, that he's measured in terms of what he's doing and how he's doing it. Yeah. And you know, as I said, as with you know, the wolves themselves, there is a certain level of honor about it, in terms of, you know, if they're going to fight, they'll do it to the absolute best of their ability, but you know, they don't have to fight.
Yeah.
And if people are direct, honest and open to it, then Bullvi at least will accept it.
Yeah. Which is what they want. They like, the whole point of this is to find humans and get them on board so they can live like this glorious.
It's the unification, you know, the Great Crusade was about unification, not not conquering, but you know, they take that if you know, people decided that they didn't want to they didn't want to be unified.
Yeah. So he takes it as like it's a heavy loss and a heavy burden. They're here to celebrate and find people, and then it's obviously it's like the last thing he wants to do is kill people that should be happy to see him
prospering under the Imperium. And like it's as he said, like it's ironic because it's as I said, it's six tyrants that have you know, gone and caused all of this problem for thousands of people and 7 years of war. Mm. You know, and I can't remember, but you know, I think it's a good mirror to the fact that it's a handful of Primarchs on either side.
Yeah.
And again, it's those individuals that are causing these issues.
Mm. Wow. Things don't change whether you're in 2022 or in the 31st millennium.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so with that, Bulwar's housecarl, Johan, scurried out of the ship and says that two ships arrived in orbit a few hours ago, and one of them has a message from Leman Russ himself ordering the Space Wolves to stop all operations at once and rendezvous with him at Tel'Kara in 5 months. Not just the 13th, but the entire Legion. Orders have been given that the Wolves are bound to Prospero.
Uh-oh. Yeah. That's bad news if you're on Prospero.
Yeah. But yeah, we don't know what's going on yet.
No.
But Bullvi told him to send out orders to marshal his company to withdraw from all operations, meet for resupply, and then they're going to travel for more than two sectors to the Galactic North. He then said, what about the second ship? And this was a long-range scout ship with a message from one of the admirals. The warp storms are slowly clearing up, making travel easier. And as a result, they've actually found a system that had been cut off, but there's no indication that anyone ever settled there. However, they have detected some Vox transmissions from one of the planets. Jurgen and Halvin told the Wolf Lord to let the army deal with it. They'd reclaimed every world in the sector, so what can they do? But Bulwar told them that it's time to do their duty to mankind. So we jump forward. And now Bulwar is in another Stormbird, ejecting from his flagship, the Iron Wolf, down towards a greenish-yellow planet. Is this disobeying orders, or is this belaying orders?
I think it's belaying them, because he does say, like, we've got, I think they have the conversations, like, we've got enough time, you know, it's our duty, we'll still go and rendezvous, but while we're here, we've got to do the right thing by the tenants of the Crusade. And the All Father's wishes. So we'll just check it out, and then we'll go from there. I think, as for loreheads, we know that the 13th do get to where they need to go anyway. But they don't disobey orders. They do get to Prospero for what they need to get to Prospero for. But for now, yeah, it's more of a, we're still going to do this. I'm in charge of this element of the Crusade. I'm the Wolf Lord. You know, these are my orders. We're not disobeying. We're just doing this first.
Mm-hmm. They've clicked on the side quest to try and level up before they get to the boss.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Smart thinking.
You need to level up, right? It's all about the grind.
Yeah, they've got to go kill 1,000 boars and chickens.
Indeed.
And then go. Anyway, so according to the star charts, this planet didn't have a name, and he studied a photo of it that had been taken over the last 24 hours, and he was surprised that any life could even be on the surface. They'd encountered many worlds that had not been lucky or strong enough to survive the warp storms, and this appeared to be one of them. But this world may have gotten off light may not have gotten off lightly. Much of its landmass was barren, lifeless, and dangerously radioactive. He paused on one of the pictures, zoomed in, and looked at a ruined city that seemed to be on a river's edge, considered it with his wolf guard at how strange it looked. The city was almost destroyed, but apart from the ruined buildings, there was no sign of any kind of battle. There was no remains, no broken vehicles, no bomb craters, and no obvious signs of war. He brought his wolf guard with him and a dozen Marines, as he couldn't spare or wait for anyone else to finish withdrawing from vital operations to prepare to leave the sector. They couldn't figure out the cause of what happened, and Halfdan's mood darkened as he touched an iron charm. And straight away, he turns and says, "It must have been psychers then, or as they call on Fenris, warlocks." They don't like psychers.
No, they don't like psychers. They like rune priests and people that breed the weird. Yeah. But they don't like psychers.
They come out of nowhere, literally. "Oh, I don't like this. Oh, it must have been psychers."
Oh, it's Wiley's touching, you know, superstitious amulet.
Yeah.
Definitely those psychers, those warlocks and witches. Burn them! Burn them! So, yeah.
So the reason they don't like it is just prior to the Age of Strife, psychers had started appearing all over the place and on human worlds, causing chaos and destruction. During the Great Expedition, they discovered plenty of these nightmarish beings, and the Allfather had demanded that the planets they inhabited were burned to ash. It seemed that whoever had been on this planet had nuked it just to get rid of any psychic presence. However, Bulvi doubted it was psychers. He showed them another image of the mountains nearby and showed these other structures that had been slyly built into the mountainside. There were low white buildings in clusters like colonies of toadstools. And then another image showing thousands of people milling around what was clearly another discrete city. More interestingly was another structure that was more than 5,000 meters high, made of black material that reflected the light, almost making it invisible to orbiting ships, with a number of large spike spires. No one on the Iron Wolf could identify it, hence this trip on the Stormbird for a closer look. The other two, again, suggested they abandon the mission, that we need to get to our Primarch rather than waste this time. But Bulvar reminds them that it will take at least 8 weeks for his forces to be ready to leave the system. So in that time, we'll make contact with the people below and bring them into the Imperium. The Stormbird circled around the city of Aneros, the home of the planet Senate. Looking at farmers harvesting their crops and the locals staring up at them and the herds of young looking livestock running from the loud engines. The large Stormbird struggled to find a landing port, so settled for some open grassland. And as it landed, its thrusters set alight the bush grass. And by the time the ramp had opened, the Wolf Guard exited from a cordon around the ship. A number of dome-shaped vehicles had made their way towards them, stopping at a safe distance whilst men and women peered at the strangers in these ships. The Wolf Lord surveyed the gathering locals and saw their looks of surprise and fear as they saw giant armored soldiers and their massive bolt guns drew attention. "We come in peace, I promise."
Definitely. They're the good guys.
So he was surprised at the meager turnout. Even on the last planet, who had despised them from the beginning, the streets were packed with citizens wanting to look at the strangers from Terror. But here, there was barely even a town's worth of people. He approached towards a group and sized them up silently like a predator to prey, the good guys, and spoke to a young man in his 20s and introduced himself by name and title. The young man greeted him warily, welcoming him to Antimon. His name was Andras Centano, and his father, Javrin, is the Speaker of the Planet Senate. Bulvi confirmed that Andras was the one he'd spoken to while still on the Iron Wolf and the one who had invited him to the planet's surface. Andra said that Parliament was currently in session and they had agreed to speak to the Space Wolves. So Andras led the Wolf Lord and his men to their vehicles, which appeared to be too small and fragile to carry Astartes. But he was surprised that they were sturdy enough to do the job, and it took them over an hour to travel out of the farmlands and into the city. He noticed that the houses were made from a thick white material and seemed more like bunkers than homes. The Antimon sat in almost complete silence for the journey, but when they did speak, it was in a hard Gothic that Bulvi found hard to follow. He could sense their tension and unease, and he felt the same, but he could keep his feelings hidden. and he secretly hoped this world would welcome them peacefully, as he could wash the stain off the Lammas campaign from his soul. The Senate building was a strange thing to see. It was a tall spiral-like with a cone-shaped base, with ramps that connected all around the outside of a building. They went inside, and along the hall was a number of statues carved to represent all different walks of life on the planet, from noblemen down to entertainers. Jurgen took keen interest in one that seemed to look like a warrior, in long sleeve chainmail and a veil of finer material over its face, with two thin pistols and a long thin sword at its side, and mockingly said, "So it looks like your people used to know about warfare. How fortunate that you have been able to leave such ways behind." Andres was taken aback and actually quite offended, and told him that the Armagers were once the young sons and daughters of the noble house and had kept their planet safe for millennia. It's only the will of the council that keeps the old ways buried. And after a short pause, he led them into the parliamentary chambers, and they were hit with an overwhelming loud amount of shouting, and senators in private booths sat on thrones as high as 15 stories. And again, these people spoke in a high Gothic, and Bulvi only caught the words quota and lottery, but quickly they noticed their guests and fell silent.
Oh dear, yeah. Something's afoot.
Yes, something's psychers.
Psychers. What I was going to say, I think, because I don't think we get any more on the tall, was it spire that's all made from black? I don't think
we get any more.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that when we get it. But yes, yeah. Obviously, something is afoot, and obviously, quota and lottery are the key words to
currency.
And you know, the suspicious, I would say, not suspicious, I think. Our author is you know, purposely drawing our attention to the architecture of the city, and kind of hinting that there is, you know, there are subtle reasons why things are the way they are.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no obvious no obvious settlements, but if you look close enough, they're all in the mountains.
Exactly.
Apart from like a bit of farmland, and then
they're all bunkers.
Yeah, there's bunkers, and it all seems very peculiar, and like you say, there's the ominous black tower,
yes,
almost hidden, which is obviously disconcerting as well for the guys coming down to this odd planet. And then the fact that, they don't have an army anymore,
and no,
Andres said, well, we used to, but the council is suppressing it, so something's going on,
yeah, there already. Is. There is definitely, you know, an underlying tension. We can't quite put our fingers on it at the moment because we haven't heard enough, but we're going to very shortly.
So let's meet the Senate. Javrin Centeno, he sat on the throne in the centre, which was at the top of a long set of stairs. He did not welcome the guests, but said, "Let me begin this farce by saying my son is a fool. He is barely 25 and he's responsible for bringing these beasts among us. I only allow it now to prove that although he is credulous, the Senate is not." He looked at Bulvi and said, "Judging by the baubles hanging from your armour, you must be in charge." I like this because it says, "The Wolf Lord was shocked at the manner he was spoken to and was actually speechless for a moment. He managed to compose himself and suppress his rage and began introducing himself and his titles. But before he was cut off by the speaker, who did not want him to recite his petty titles, make your demands and go away." You just imagine like Bulvi's face. I imagine it would have been like he'd been slapped.
I think if it was more comical, you can imagine it is just his mouth opening in stunned silence.
Yeah.
But I can imagine he's you know, got enough composure to hold that together. Inwardly, he'll be doing that. But like, it talks about what's it called? Jurgen and what's his name? Halfdan. Halfdan, obviously, about their reaction to this very shortly. But they're turning up thinking like, well, I wonder what we're going to find. They're met by this young dude and they're like, okay, this is all right. This is pretty cool. We're going to go and meet the government, the council, who are expecting us by all accounts. This is what this young dude's told us. This is excellent. And then he walks in there and he's effectively, you know, he's just come from a 7-year campaign where he's had to, you know, cause some problems for six people that spat in his hand. And now on someone's just shouting him down in his face.
Nice baubles, mate.
It's, you know, this is not a good campaign. This is not a good subsector for Bullvi.
No. But like you say, it's lucky that he is composed.
A bit more measured.
Because I think that everyone would be very dead very quickly otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would even say if this had been a Primarch, like you couldn't imagine, like, even Horus, like, you know, that would be it. The what's it called? The old Mournival.
Yeah.
You'd just be in there chopping people up. That's it. It's done.
Yeah. They all give you that chance to sort of apologize, but then if you go for it and dig deeper, then you're going to just get yourself killed.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah, like you say, especially you said it to a Primarch. Like, but anyway, so like you said, their reactions aren't as composed as Bullby, because Halfdan just growls at them and goes forward. But Bullby speaks up very quickly and says, "We're not the beasts you imagine us to be. We've journeyed across the stars to find all of humanity that was lost to us during Old Night. We're here to help you reclaim your place as rulers of the galaxy." And then he told them the tale of the rise of Old Night and man's first trips across the stars in the Age of Strife. The rise of the Emperor, the founding of the legions and the great expedition and the return of the Primarchs. And obviously now the Emperor's mission. And that is why we're here. Your isolation is now at an end. He slowly climbed the stairs and reached out his left hand to the speaker. "Take it and be in peace. The Imperium welcomes you." Jarvan got out of his seat and came down the steps towards the Wolf Lord. He looked at his hand and hissed at him, "It's all damn lies." And this is the bit I really like. Bullvi rocked back as if he had been struck, and Halfdan let out an angry roar, with Jurgen joining in and the house erupting in shouts and screams. That's the comical bit. Like, you got this big, bulky dude just rocks back in shock, like he's been just stabbed.
Like, he can't quite believe it. He's like, "Not again." Like, come on, like, you know, shake my hand. And it all sounds very theatrical, but it's, as I said, for what's his name, the speaker, and Antimon, he's it's a real red pill, blue pill moment.
Yeah,
and he's picked the wrong pill.
Yeah, I mean, he must think he's got some big old balls though to do that, right? To get in his face and say it as well.
Well, we'll find out in a bit. I think, I think less. I think it's less about the balls. I think it's more about his perceived which problem's bigger.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's probably more where it comes from. But that will be revealed in, very shortly.
Yeah. So Bullvi's got up. He's dusted himself off with his hanky.
Yeah.
Wiped the sweat off his brow. And everyone else has got back up. So Bullvi, he has to control himself and stops himself from ripping this old man in half. And he lets the anger pass over him because he wants cool heads to prevail and reason to come forward rather than bring more destruction onto another human world. He was about to shout for silence when an almighty boom like thunder silenced everyone. He recognised the sound of some type of high-yield ordnance deploying in the atmosphere. He voxed to the Iron Wolf, but all he got was a scrambled reply. A woman screamed and shouted, "They're here. They've come early." The senators began to flee from the room, and Jarvan said, "I knew it. You came to distract us while your soulless cronies could sweep down on us. Get out of here and don't come back, you barbarians." Bullvi turned to his men and ordered them to start making for higher ground to get hold of the Stormbird to extract them and so they could contact the Iron Wolf for an update. He turned to Andras, who was clearly terrified, and he said, "It's the Harrowers. They've returned." Bullvi and the Astartes ran out into the night and began climbing the spiral stairs, trying to get Vox to the Iron Wolf or the Stormbird, but could not get either. The sky was lit up by gunfire as the Iron Wolf was clearly being attacked by enemy craft. Bullvi was able to get weak connection, and someone on board said that there were at least 20 cruiser-sized ships and a dozen escorts. They were cloaked and took them by surprise, and they'd been boarded. Bullvi ordered them to break contact, get out of orbit, and get to safety. The comms failed, and after a few moments, a loud explosion and bright plasma burst was seen. And Bulvi told his men they had to assume the Iron Wolf was destroyed before seeing that Andras had followed them up. He turned to him and said, "Who are the Harrowers?" And Andras said, "We don't know, but they return every 7 years. They used to hunt us like animals, men, women, children, especially the children. They like the way they scream. They would take people by the hundreds and torture them. But that was before the quota. A couple of generations ago, the Senate agreed to make a sacrifice. They gave up their criminals and outcasts. Everyone else hid in the bunkers and the hills, and the invaders would stay less than a year. And by the time they were done, they didn't have the energy to hunt for anybody else." The Wolf Lord recoiled in disgust and said, "You sacrificed humans to the monsters. Why didn't you fight?" And Andras fought back and said, "We did at first. The Armagers fought back. They ambushed and killed their leader once, and the invaders returned to their ships. But they rained down death for 7 days. Most of the world was laid in ruin. The Senate then disbanded them and forbade anyone to rise arms against them again." And then we find out that these raids have been going on for about 200 years, but every 7 years, the crime rate completely drops and they have less and less people to offer. And that's why we have a lottery to try and bolster the numbers. But this year they've come early and we're not prepared. We don't have enough prisoners and the civilians haven't got enough food to last them the year. And Bulvi assumed they'd come early because they'd grown bored of being handed sacrifices and felt the need to hunt again. And they watched as in the distance a number of craft landed on the tall black spires. And Andras explained that the Harrowers had built these things, but their technology is borderline sorcery. And they will wait about a day and then they'll send their first parties to the collection site about 10 kilometres away. So, psychers it is. We were right.
Clearly psychers. Psychers with a fetish issue.
Yeah, yeah, a really horrible one.
Yes.
Bulvi felt the urge to strangle Andras, but stopped himself. This kid wasn't responsible for what was going on. It was the Senate and leaders who had failed humanity. And he told Andras to guide him to this site. He was going to make the Xenos pay. So the following afternoon, these cargo haulers began moving from Aneros towards the collection site, which was a large flat tiled area with rows of small iron rings across it. The space walls watched from some distance as the trucks lined up, and out of the driver cabs, men in padded suits carried weapon staves and emerged towards the back of the trucks. They went and began ordering the chained up prisoners out onto the floor, chaining them down to these metal hoops. The Astartes watched in disgust as Halvdan said that they would have to beat him senseless before he would allow them to chain them to these hoops. And in the distance, some resistance broke out as if they'd heard him say it. And the guards did just that to the prisoners trying to escape. And eventually all of the sacrifices were tied up as the guards drove away. The wolves had arrived the night before and prepared, stripping any ceremonial dress and smearing coal and mud on their armour to remove its shine. They were in the hills a few kilometres away and had identified where the Harrowers' landing site would be when they came to collect their bounty. Bulvi stated that this would be their kill zone. And Jurgen questioned the Wolf Lord, asking what the point of it was. "This is not an Imperial world. Its leader even called you a liar. If the Xenos hadn't arrived, we would have been aboard the Iron Wolf preparing to destroy them." And Bulvi agreed, but he countered that they must still serve mankind and they will not do that by killing humans. They will do that by killing the Xenos that are here to kill humans. If we can't achieve that here, then everything we've done so far, again, will be for nothing. So, again, it's a very hard line to walk for him because, like, they're right. If it hadn't been for these guys arriving, they would already be flattening this planet, like killing what was left.
You're exactly right. It is exactly that. It's a very fine line. Because that would have been, you know, that's it. It's the flip of a coin, right? If he hadn't realised that that these Xenos were coming to cause this level of bother, this planet would have been targeted for re-education, and that would have done it. But instead, they're now being rescued. I think what's interesting, what Jurgen said, was that, you know, it was Jürgen, wasn't it? Was it Halfdan? But he said, like, you know, it's not an imperial planet.
Yeah.
So actually, they don't know, you know, at this point, they don't know whether they are going to come on board for the big win, whether they are going to be reunified. Mm. At the moment, it is like Bolvar's gone now. Actually, there's Xenos, you know, picking on mankind. We'll deal with that first.
Only humans are allowed to kill humans, not filthy aliens.
Definitely not. Definitely not. It's only post humans as well. Not even humans. But yes, and you definitely can't kill. Definitely aren't allowed to kill humans if you're a human that follows Chaos or a Psyker.
No.
Only if the Allfather or the Emperor, as he's otherwise known, has given permission to do so.
Yeah. But this is his opportunity to prove that they are here to help.
Absolutely.
So if they kill these harrowers, then maybe Antimos or Antimon, whatever it's called, will come on board.
Yeah, peacefully unify with the Great Crusade.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. So the Space Wolves sat in cover waiting for the aliens to come for their prize, which they did just after sunset. They began to descend from their spires towards the terrified prisoners. Bolvar turned to his men and said, "For Russ and the Allfather," and then he walked out of the tree line. Halfdan and Jürgen went with him, and they stopped about 10 metres from the edge of the collection site and made no attempt to conceal themselves. The prisoners that noticed them were horrified, confused, and believed that the Astartes may have come for them too. Halfdan grumbled, "I don't see why I have to be the bait." And Jürgen suggested that Bolvar wanted his most impressive warriors to strike fear into the hearts of the enemy. Or in your case, Halfdan, the ugliest. And with that, the green lights began appearing on the horizon, making their way to the other edge of the collection site. The harrowers had arrived. A dozen slim jet bikes whizzed towards the Space Wolves, each with a single rider. The bikes were sleek and blade-like, with barbs protruding underneath and sharp side stabilizers. The riders were human-like, but tall and slim, wearing sleek armor in the same fashion as the bikes. The bikes whizzed past the Space Wolves, and Bolvar caught a glance of one of them, their slim, scarred, and strangely tattooed face, and its eyes were lifeless black pits. Behind the bikes came a dozen transports, crawling with warriors, eager to glimpse the new challenge waiting for them. They stopped short 100 yards and the crew disembarked. Most of the raiders were tall, Most of the raiders wore tall cone-like helmets and held long-barreled rifles. The leaders had large plumes of hair spouting from their helmets. The vehicles were decorated with mesh woven with bleached bone. They formed up in a mob and began slowly advancing on the Astartes, whispering in an odd language, but did not seem to fear the three wolves or believe them to be a threat. Leading the mob was a hunched figure in bizarre armour. Half of his hair was shaved, exposing his scalp covered in complex tattoos. Its exposed pointed ear had been pierced and flexed, so it hung to the side of his face like fleshy lace. He had a complex pattern of flesh and metal running from his temple to his collarbone, and his teeth were filed to sharp points. It wore a gauntlet on one hand, where the metal fingers were filed into long, sharp blades, and it wore a scent of a strange biomixture which brought a sickly bile to the back of the Space Wolf's throat, like a super gimp.
I mean, these all sound, you know, they sound like they could be Eldar, but they just seem a bit darker.
Yes.
And this, what I noted was obviously this is back when they still called them Eldar.
Well, that's it. Yeah. I was going to say, and they don't really acknowledge them, because I think they are literally, because they just call them the Harrowers the entire time.
Yeah.
I don't think they're called Eldar or Dark Eldar.
They're not in this story. And obviously, at this point, this, you know, as I said, it's perfectly logical or reasonable to assess that Bolvar and his expeditionary crusade have never seen any Eldar.
No.
Regardless of whether they're dark, regular, you know, Eldar as they were once known, Eldari or Drukhari, whichever way around you want to call it. Yeah, they may never have seen them. So all they're seeing are, you know, space elves. So you've got space Vikings versus space elves, but the dark variety.
Really gothic, goth ones.
They like, they're a bit kinky.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You can understand why Slaanesh is, you know, taken a liking to the Eldar.
Yeah.
Sorry, so, tangent.
Bulvar looks at the creatures and he felt no fear. Only the inner wolf trying to get out and kill, but he kept it down for now. The space wolf struggled against the alien pheromones, keeping their discomfort masked. He spared a glance at the chained up, weeping humans and turned to address the Xenos. Bulvar introduced himself. He used his full titles, as the Astartes loved to do so, and told the aliens they would not be preying on the humans anymore. The leader laughed and spoke in a broken, low Gothic, telling Bulvar that he would make a fine gift for his master, who will enjoy peeling off his flesh. And Bulvar said, "So you're not in charge here?" And the leader said, "I am but a lowly servant of Dragaar Shakaar." And Bulvar said, "Then we have nothing left to discuss." And quick as a flash, Bulvar shot the alien between the eyes. Before it could hit the floor, the rest of the space walls opened fire from cover, cutting the mob down. Bolter rounds and crack missiles were going off all over the place. Initially, the Harriers didn't respond until the larger bodyguards began charging forward. Bulvar grabbed his axe, powered it up, and charged back at them. After a short but violent melee, the Harriers broke and ran away, and the wolves chased them down. The last of them were cut down, firing wildly back at the wolves as they did, and Bulvar felt a sharp pain in his knee after getting struck by a stray round. The transports began to take off and escape, but one was down very quickly by a pair of crack missiles. The second escaped, but not without being hit by another missile, throwing the burning corpses over the side on its way back to safety. With the enemy beaten for now, he had his officers check on his men and get a status report, and turn to address the sacrifices. "The Allfather has sent his warriors to slay the aliens on your behalf, and we will not rest until they are gone forever. He told them they will no longer live in fear and told them to return to the city and tell others what they had witnessed. And they began cutting them free from their chains. And as he did so, the survivors ran as quick as they could back to the mountains." Once they were alone, he and Halfdan spoke, saying that they had a good start, but that felt lucky that the aliens have been complacent after not meeting a challenge over 200 years. They decided to call in the Stormbird and draw any pursuers out into the wasteland to give them prisoners a chance to get home. They would find and make camp and see how badly the humans wanted their world back. So I think it's been a good build now, like settled on the planet.
Yep.
And like, it's not what they expected. They thought it was going to be and welcome some humans, get you into the fold or kill you. And then they've got these aliens that have turned up just to complicate everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're quite happy to get stuck in. But at the same time, they're on the one hand, that they've got this engagement. They're also, you know, their way home, their way back to the rest of the Legion.
Yeah.
The Iron Wolf is, you know, a broken, well, as far as they know, it could be anywhere. And like, you know, as being told to move away anyway, regardless of its fate, which we don't know at this stage. And so they are, as far as Bulvar is going to be concerned, you know, they've got nothing else to do but deal with these Harriers and work out then what they're going to do with the planet.
Yeah. That's right. Well, we've got no way off the planet, so it might as well kill something.
Yep, indeed.
Yeah. And then now we find out as well that they're 4 weeks past due with Leman Russ, and they've been on this planet for 3 months.
Yeah.
So this side quest has dragged out significantly.
It has indeed. Yes, it's a proper sideways. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. he's going to have some apologising to do later on.
Yes. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's probably going to come up in his end of year review.
Sorry, no Christmas bonus. Where they've camped, there was a storm heading towards them, and the electromagnetic buzz in the distance and the warm air brought Bulvar out of his restorative trance. He'd only had about an hour, but that will have to make do. They were 100 kilometers outside of the capital and had been in a radioactive zone almost the entire time. In order to shield themselves from the Harris scanners, they could only emerge to conduct deadly short burst raids on the Reaving warbands. They'd only survived for so long purely because they were willing to suffer and live in hardship. They'd been warriors long before they were Astartes and still had no problem living as if they had done on Femoris all those years ago. There are currently two active kill teams on patrol, with a third at camp, resting and protecting the fallen. Bulvar was taking some comfort knowing that his message had gotten to the population. On occasion, when patrolling, they would locate food parcels. Not much of an offering, but the people had nothing, so everything they gave was appreciated. Halvdan limped up towards him. He'd taken a glancing blow from a harrower, and the wound still not healed. Halvdan had just completed an ammo count, and they were down to 40 bolt rounds per man, 8 grenades, 12 melter charges, and 2 crack missiles. And everything else they had was damaged or near breaking point, including their armour. He suggested they were still wasting their own lives on this mission for a planet of people who didn't even want them there. And he said that we should move to a more livable area and lay low until we are finally rescued. And Bulvar, like, nearly shits himself in shock. Like, the fact that his, like, second or third in command was willing to give it up. He digs his heels in and says that he would fight to do everything he could to prevent a repeat on the last planet. He wants to avoid killing another human population. And if wiping out the Xenos and dying whilst doing so would bring this planet back to humanity, then that is worth doing. Which is what we suspected. We've covered that, innit? He doesn't want to just kill humans. He wants to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And that's what they're here to do.
Indeed. Absolutely.
And if you're delayed, and if you're not back with the Primarch, you better be doing it for a good reason as well. So, but with that, the Stormbird carrying Jurgen and his men came back into view. It was in bad shape and it had smoke pouring out of it. It managed to land mostly in one piece, and Jurgen came out and explained that it had been hit by a set of fighters. They did manage to kill them and escape. But two more of the Battle Brothers had entered the Red Dream. Mm. And I'll pass that to you to explain the Red Dream, because they're not dead.
This is what the Space Wolves are calling it. But effectively, every Astarte can go into. It's like a forced hibernation. So when an Astarte takes sufficient amount of damage but doesn't die, so it's not enough to kill them or put them in a dread, but it's enough that their body just says, right, we're shutting down and effectively going into hibernation until medical attention can be distributed. So they won't die, but they won't do anything else either.
Right.
So they are effectively in a form of coma. But that, you know, if they get, you know, you get an apothecary, a wolf priest or whoever else, depending on which chapter or legion you're part of, then you'll be fine. But effectively it's Astartes will go into a coma to protect themselves if they're severely damaged enough. Now, this particular group of Astartes, because they've been waging this hit and run war for, you know, let's call it war for the past 3 months, and they've been living in a radiation zone, they're all on the edge anyway, so it's not taking as much to put them into the Red Dream.
Yeah, fair enough. So and I think they're running short of numbers as well.
They are, yeah.
They've got a few, they've got a few injured. Must have a good handful of them in the Red Dream. So I imagine that it's going to be hard to heal if you're in the radiation as well.
That's exactly it. So, yeah. Like, it just touched on it there that Bulvar was just in, like a restorative kind of trance. And again, that's more to do with the Astartes physiology, but they're not healing as quickly as they normally would be because they're in a radiation zone. So their augmented bodies are already fighting against the radiation, which would kill a normal human. Then on top of that, they've got whatever battle wounds and so on and so forth. So it's really grinding them down.
Right, so they need to get out of here. And Jurgen brings them some good news. They'd recovered a package with a message direct for Bullvi. And the scrawled message was a short vox frequency with a time and the name Andras. And it looks like the Antimonians are ready to take the next step. The wolves arrived at the scheduled rendezvous point 4 hours early. They'd moved stealthily through the woods and sat waiting in the dark. At the appointed time, three cloaked figures emerged from the woods opposite, and Bullvi was impressed that his men had not detected them until they broke cover. Bullvi went down alone and met Andras, who'd been waiting 2 weeks for the wolves to find a message. Bullvi asked why the Senate had changed their mind suddenly, and Andras said that they hadn't. The Senate was dead. The Xenos leader had agreed to a peace treaty at the Senate building, but it had been a trap. They had killed many and kidnapped and tortured the rest to death before returning to the spire. Andras and his men had been fighting the aliens inside the city and wanted to join forces with the wolves. Bullvi disappointed him when he said that it was pointless fighting them in the city at this point. Bullvi's objective was to divide the Harrowers and make them turn on each other. If they believed their leader was incapable, others would fight for his place and there would be inner turmoil and they could exploit that. But he added it would make things move much faster if they killed the current leader themselves and then let the other factions implode and fight amongst themselves. Andras offered to provide a transport on the condition that his men could invade the spire with them. Bullvi said thanks but no thanks, and Andras asked him how he planned to get in without him. His men had been able to learn how to use the Xenos ships over the years of studying them from shelter, and they'd picked up a lot of their language, and they would easily be able to use the machinery. So Bullvi relented and agreed that they could come. But first, they needed to capture a ship. Andras had been planning an ambush for some time, and he led the wolves to a burnt-out building overlooking a makeshift field base where 40 Harrowers worked around several small crafts gathering their supplies. Andras and his men left the wolves whilst they set their own plan in motion, and Andras returned a while later, and wearing their armour shined to a bright mirror sheen. He sat and told the wolf lord that they would be ready to strike shortly, and after a moment, Bullvi asked him, when the wolves first arrived and held the planet, no one had replied except for Andras. Clearly his father wasn't interested, so why have you felt compelled to break the rules? Andras explained that when he was 4 years old, the Harrowers came to his house. His father had only had time to hide him, and the Harrowers took his mother and sister. The father was spared only because he was a member of the Senate. The Harrowers had taken his mother and sister, and his father hadn't even tried to stop them. Not long after, he discovered his grandfather's blades and began training in secret, vowing to exact revenge for his family. When he saw the Astartes arrive, he had felt that his chance had finally come for revenge. And Bullvi put his hand on Andras' shoulders and says, "It has. You have my oath on it." An explosion rang out in the distance, signaling their time to strike. Three of the transport ships lifted up and headed to where Andras' men were causing a distraction and fighting the Xenos. They left one ship behind. They always leave one ship behind, Andras smirked, for reserves. Bullvi and his men leapt up and took out the remaining 10 warriors guarding it. As they advanced, Bullvi felt the wolf inside trying to force its way out. He was able to contain it for now. With the ship captured, the wolves and the rest of Andras' warriors boarded. The two who stated they could work the machine joined the wolves' pilot, who is named Ranulf, at the control system. And after a brief contemplation, they were able to get it off the ground. Bullvi ordered them to get a move on. If we don't get to that spire before they sound the alarm, we won't make it at all. Andras asked Bullvi if they could really do this. And he answered, if we can find the reactor, then we'll be able to bring down the tower. Once the leader finds out what the plan is, he will come directly to us. They arrived in an eye shot of the spire about 10 minutes later, and a hissing language came through the box. It was a challenge that they knew they couldn't answer. Bullvi took a knee and suggested everyone do the same. And as they did, suddenly the sky lit up in a howl of energy beams. The transport took a beating, but Ranulf was expert enough to land it roughly on the pad, and the warriors evacuated onto the platform. Ranulf was ordered to stay behind and ensure the transport was ready and working so they could escape. The others made their way to a hatch and used a melter charge to blow a hole in the wall, and they entered the loading bay. The scans they had showed them that the reactors were about 700 metres away, and they had to fight their way through the corridors, breaking through hatch after hatch. They also noticed that the walls and almost every surface was etched in strange but graceful carvings bathed in an eerie purple glow. Eventually, they knew they were close when they burst through to a room with at least 50 Xenos warriors waiting for them. The two wolves on point took a shower of splintering rounds, but their armor held up, and they charged into the massive bodies, making room for the rest to follow. By the time they hacked their way in through the room and killed all the defenders, one of Andras' men lay dead. All the wolves lived, but they were all covered in minor wounds. They pressed forward. They emerged into a huge cavernous chamber with three large archways leading outwards and the lines walled with control units. In the centre, suspended in a complex web structure, was an enormous spindle-shaped crystal. The feeling of ambient power radiated over the warriors. They'd found the reactor core. Halvdan went and set the remaining two charges against the structure, where he thought they could do the most damage and hoped it would be enough. As they were preparing to leave, the counterattack came from three sides at once. Most of them managed to get into cover, but Bolvar had still been in the open and moving to one side when it started. Heavy armoured warriors burst into the room, pushing the Antimonians back and coming face to face with the wolves. Two of the guards on the door were killed, one by a purple beam of energy, likely from a sniper which burnt through his torso, and the other was killed by a warrior in black armour armed with electrified glaives, which cracked blue waves of electricity. The wolves with them were then driven backwards, and in the gap emerged a tall, thin figure wearing intricate armour and wreathed in swirling purple energy. King of the Psykers.
It sounds like a Psyker to me.
It held a long, curved black blade in one hand and a long barrel pistol in the other. Its hair was hanging loosely past his shoulders, but its face. That's what made Bolvar stop for a moment and feel a sickening chill in its body. It didn't really have a face, more like it had many faces. It wore a hollow mask which twisted in the features of men and women and children alike. Each face appeared to scream in silent pain and terror. The wolf inside... sorry.
That's the wolf inside you trying
to get
out.
That's the wolf inside me. Choking to death. The wolf inside him rose up and seemed to ask, "Now?" And Bolvar raised his axe and said, "Now," letting out a deep primal howl and then charged. Two bodyguards tried to intervene, and Bolvar offed them with his plasma pistol without missing a step. The third bodyguard leapt forward, its movement almost too fast for the human eye. Luckily, Bolvar was in a blind rage and his body moved instinctively, almost automatically. He swept the Xenos blade aside and removed the alien's head. The chieftain stood waiting for him, its weapon still loose by its side. Using his momentum, Bolvar swung a blow that would have cut anything clean in half, but he felt a jarring pain when his axe hit a reflector field. He would have died then and there if it wasn't for a fierce warrior named Lars. He hurled himself at the chieftain, and in return, it swiped his blade and took off Lars's head. Bolvar was enraged, and he set out a flurry of killing blows, each deflected, and the alien jumped back laughing with glee. Bolvar fired his plasma pistol, but the round dissolved within the shield. Another bodyguard piled into Bolvar, taking him down to the floor. It was about to skewer him with its weapon, but a pistol shot rang out, and it collapsed as Andras was stood behind, and two of his men charged the chieftain. And then Andras joined in and fought 3-1. The Antimonians had their own reflector shields, keeping them from being killed instantly. Bolvar managed to get back up and surveyed the battle. Many of his men had given in to the Wolfen and were in killing frenzies. However, the stream of Xenos was not slowing. The chieftain was now so intent on killing Andras, it failed to see Bolvar charge at him, this time pushing his body through the reflector shield, which penetrated his armor like ice. But he persisted. The alien took notice and screamed curses at him. Bolvar grabbed it by the throat and threw it at the reactor core. As its reflector hit the core, the chieftain was vaporized instantly. The harrowers paused and backed off, and then came an almighty groan from the reactor that sent them fleeing in fear. Bolvar ordered his survivor men back to the transport. Five of Andras's men and two wolves lay dead, and they gathered the bodies and fled. As they approached the transport, they saw Ranulf hacking towards fleeing harrowers with his chainsaw, stopping them from taking his newly fixed ship. They boarded and took off in a hurry, and as they took to the air, the spire lit up from within and a chain of explosions started to bring it down. It fell like a tree, and when it hit the floor, shattered into pieces, sending debris out for miles in every direction. The force of the explosion sent Bolvar's transport spinning through the air, and only Ranulf's skills kept them from crashing to their death, managing to land somewhat in one piece. "What now?" asked Andras. "We head back to Onaros. Either they will start fighting amongst themselves, or we will have visitors shortly." Throughout the morning, the citizens watched from their shelters as the Harrow ship took to the skies and disappeared into space. Ulvi and Andras led their men to the center building to await their fate. As evening set, the warriors ate and drank and enjoyed their fellowship as new battle brothers. They waited for an attack, but as night fell, there was nothing. They couldn't even detect the ships in the upper atmosphere anymore. It seemed as if they were gone. The next morning, Bulvi's vox jumped to life. "Fenris, this is Stormblade. Are you receiving?" Bulvi answered eagerly, asking what the ship's status was, and the voice that came back informed him that a battle group arrived 20 hours ago and found the fleet of Xenox ships fleeing. They inflicted heavy losses, and the surviving Xenos have fled to the edge of the system. Bulvi saw that his battle brothers staring, waiting for the news, and he told them the battle group had broken Xenos and Antimon is now free. And everyone broke out into thunderous cheers, and they all lived happily ever after. Sort of.
The good guys win. Yay!
Good guys win. Andras clapped Bulvi on the back. "We owe you more than we can ever repay you. This will be known as the day of our deliverance." And Bulvi shook his head. "There's no debt between us, brother. Just serve the Allfather faithfully in the years to come and give your dues to the Imperium. That is thanks enough." And Andras' smile left him. And he said, "I don't understand." And Bulvi laughed, said, "There's nothing to worry about this moment. It will be months before the Imperium can send representatives here and begin integrating your world. For now, you shall restore your Senate. The Imperial Governor will need their support when he is put in place. Then the real work can begin." Andras's arm fell from Bulvi to his side. "There's been a misunderstanding. We have no intention of joining your Imperium, especially as we have just regained our freedom." And Bulvi's heart turned to lead, and everyone felt the air change and the tension grow.
Oh, dear.
The Wolf Lord paused, desperate to say the right thing. "Listen to me. I came here because the Imperium needs every human world it can get. We need to rebuild what was lost. There are other alien races out there that want to wipe us out. Surely you and your people understand that better than most." He took a step forward and extended his hand. "We must be united, my brother. An age of glory awaits you. All you have to do is take my hand." Andras fought back the anger in his voice. "How could you say this to me? You told me a life not worth fighting for is not a life worth living at all. Antimon is free, and the Armagers will protect it." And Bulvi shook his head sadly. "Please, I ask you one more time to join me." Andras's tone hardened. He said, "I will fight you if I have to." Bulvi's hand fell heavily to his side. "Very well, brother. So be it." Andras never had time to register the axe blow that ended his life. A split second later, gunfire rang out and the shocked Armagers fell dead. Bulvi watched their blood pool for a long time until his vox crackled again, asking for his instruction. He replied, "This world has refused compliance. Begin combat operations at once." With heavy footsteps, he walked bloody footprints up the steps of the speaker's chair and sat there with a heavy heart. Outside, the people of Antimon were rejoicing in the streets, celebrating their deliverance. Then the bombs began to fall. The end. Shit.
Yeah, you really feel for Bulvi. He's tried everything and he's like, come on. There've been plenty of other people. Like, as I said, there's that nobility in him, like that kind of born in battle where he's like, come on, we've fought for this together, brother. Like, yeah. And he's given him more than one chance, which is what he wouldn't have done to a lot of other people.
Yeah.
And again, unfortunately, Andras is just like young, naive, not thinking about things the right way. And this time, you know, as I said, Bulvi gives him the chances and then that's it. It's like, nope, right, that's it. We're done. We don't have time for this. We're overdue. The old Stormwolf has turned up to take us back to Leman. Like, sorry, pal, and shoot him.
Like, yeah. I mean, you feel it though, didn't you? Like,
yeah.
You can still his heart break.
the weight of it all, because he I think he likes Andrus. Like, I think there's a like camaraderie between warriors there, and like I think he respected him, and then it's just all kind of taken away a bit at the end, and he's like
really quickly as well. Like, and he was calling him brother. Like, they've all spent that night like rejoicing because they fought together, they bled together.
Yeah,
and like especially like Space Wolves and Vikings, what do they like to do? They like to kill together and they feast together.
Feast together.
And that's brotherhood.
Yeah. And that's it. And like as I said, they both work together to take out the Archon, the leader of the Harrowers. And you do feel a bit rough for him. So
yeah.
And it's you feel that it's I think, you know, Mike Lee does a good job of doing it, is that cycle, it feels like a cycle that Bullvi is going over and up through and through again and again, is like coming to a world of humans, saying to them, hey guys, look, we've got this, you know, we've found you, let's join with us. And he's, you know, just take my hand, just shake my hand and it's done. Yeah. And everyone's fighting him, and it's like you can feel it wearing him down.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and it's like, and the other thing is like, it's just every time they go to a planet like this, his argument's going to get weaker with like his generals, because they were like, "Ah, oh, don't worry about it," and he was like, "No, stick with it, stick with the plan. We'll show that we're here to do the right thing, and they'll join us." And then, like you say, young naive boy.
Yeah.
And then it didn't quite spit in his hand, but it broke his heart, which is worse.
I think that was it. I think because they fought together and he thought they were all on the same page.
Mm.
That was the bit. And then it uses his words against, like, not against him, but uses the words that he's given him to sort of state why they can't join the Imperium. Like, you know, a life like that's not worth fighting for, is not worth living at all or whatever. And it's like, you know, you could, that's the bit that breaks him, and he's like, oh, fuck. Yeah. Right, I'm gonna have to kill this guy. It's a bit rough.
I think they do hurt their own case though, because they say, like, when they were freeing the slaves, they say, you'll never bow to anyone again
except for the Emperor.
Except the Emperor. And it's like, you're bound to that guy because you'll get really brutally killed if you don't.
Rather than bowing to six guys or several chains of people, it's just one guy, just one guy. That's it.
It's one guy.
It's definitely not a dictator.
No.
No one said that.
He's not going to turn your planet into a giant factory.
Yeah. I mean, it depends what your planet's good for, but yeah, it will be something. Yeah. But whatever. He's the Emperor, not a dictator. I mean,
yeah.
Very clear.
He's the good guy.
He's the good. We're the good guys. We're the good guys.
I also think as well, they come to these planets and they send modified giant warriors down to the planet to say,
yeah,
we're friendly, join us. Maybe they should start sending, like, maybe they do in some cases, send more humans down first.
I think they've said it before, right? Like, they'll be like, just let the Imperial Guard do it. We don't need to be here, you know, we're the Space Marines, we should only be for, like, the, you know, top tier compliance campaigns, the real sticky stuff, where we need to come in, make a planet compliant and disappear again. Mm-hmm. Leave the Imperial Guard to do this.
Yeah.
I would imagine that there's probably, they have less success. Well, I don't know. Maybe they have more success. I would imagine what probably happens is it's easier to turn down a standard human than it is a 8-foot super soldier. But then at the same time, I bet they get more, you know, guerrilla uprisings, which we've seen in some of the other books as well. Yeah. I think every legion has its way of dealing with it.
Yeah.
Some of them don't even extend the hand. They're just like, you know, we're going to make you compliant, and that's it.
So whoever's left can join in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. You know, and that, you know, we'll see how that goes. Yeah. What I did like about this is so, it's quite interesting for, as I said, for those into any of the lore of the Space Wolves in particular, but this group of the Wolves, the 13th, are all the older sword brothers of Leman's Drinking Hall, or King's Hall, before. So they were all too old. they all shouldn't have gone through the transformation process. They all did, and more of them than they expected survived.
Yeah.
But they all, so at this point, they call it the gift of the Wolfen. So a gift that's given by Russ's genetic heritage and the Allfather. And what's interesting is that you see it in this battle is that they get taken over by it, and Bolvar himself lets it out,
yeah,
it, but then reins it back in again. So it's not like the current day law is that it's the curse of the wolf, and it's not controllable. Mm. It changes you into this slavering beast. These guys in the 13th Great Company, they are able to a degree control it. They can, you know, use it in battle rather than being fully transformed.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. And the 13th, so now we're going to get into it. The 13th are the Wolven that are on the tabletop now, the units of Wolven that you have now, are made up of the rediscovered 13th Great Company, who went into the warp and were discovered, you know, several millennia later. Like, they didn't know who they were. They were like these slavering beasts, but they had remnants of power armor and markings of the 13th Great Company. And they'd gone into the warp and they came back out again. And that's where the Wolven of the Space Wolves chapter are from.
So when are we going to get to that? Is that heresy or is that something else?
So it starts in the heresy. So that's why the part of Prospero is interesting and how I know that they get there.
Right.
Because it's, so again, spoiler alert, but we'll come to it. But so at the end of the burning of Prospero, the 13th Company, or 13th Great Company, continue to pursue the Thousand Sons into the warp,
right.
Whereas the rest of the companies do not.
Ah.
And that's where they disappear. And then obviously they come back at a later point. But that's it. So it's interesting. You know, Bolvar as a character is, you know, like, it's not like you get a Wolven Bolvar or anything like that. But that's one of the pieces that the Wolven rediscovered. Wolf priests, Ulrich the Slayer's involved, and they're all bearing markings of the 13th Great Company, which went into the warp after the Thousand Sons. So as I said, it's a nice little nugget for anyone that follows those sort of two legions. Mm. storied history, as it were.
Nice. Well, I look forward to getting to that in whenever we get to that.
Well, it's not too far off. Mm. As I said, I think this next set of books, which I've only read a couple of, but the next sort of 10,
it's like
because, you know, we've kind of been like slowing down a little bit. We had lengthier ones, then we've got this, which is kind of a nice break, like a bit of a palate cleanser. And then we get into the same sort of feeling of the 10 before, you know, we have a Dark Angels one, you know, we'll deal with that. but then you get like, you get some really, really good stories with like, as I said, the Prospero piece, and then also the First Heretics coming up as well. So you've got a bit of Lorgar shenanigans, which is also quite interesting as well, because obviously, we're dealing early enough on with a lot of how different legions deal with compliance.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, as I said, none of them have quite got it right. And they all have their own problems and how they wage their wars of compliance, as it were. But it's interesting to see this side of the wolves and the 13th Great Company, which, as I said, is not really talked of in modern lore in the chapter, because they're kind of, you know, they were lost, but they found them again.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that, though.
Yeah.
It was good. Not, like I say, first good look at the Space Wolves in their own little book. And from what you've told me, it's leading on to good things.
So I think it's a nice jumping point for when you get into that.
Mm. So the next book is The Word Bearers, isn't it? Signs of the Storm.
It is, yeah.
So that's going to be good. And again, like you said, everyone does compliance differently. And I think that's going to set this next book into motion. So
indeed. We'll
get to that on the next episode. So we'll wrap it up and say thanks for joining us. I hope you liked it. Let us know what you thought about the episode. There's all the bits and pieces. If you're listening rather than watching, join us on Instagram. That's where we do most of our business, as well as YouTube. Stick Iron and Ceramite into Google and we'll come up on all the normal places. You can play with us on combat cards. And if you're doing your shopping for your hobby stuff, click on our Element Games link. Get your discount that they give you anyway. And it helps the channel out because you would have seen our giveaway that's just gone on. So our winner should be announced by now. And a gift will be on its way to some lucky person. So look forward to finishing that. But thank you very much. And we'll see you on the next one.
See you later.
As always, we would like to thank you for listening to our Iron and Ceramite podcast. If you liked us, then you can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and any other good podcast services. Just remember, in the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war.